You're tuned to The Morning Show on Listener Driven Jazz 88. I'm Peter Solomon. Joining me today in conversation is Lynn Arriol. Her recent recording on Challenge Records is called Being Human. We'll hear about that and also about an upcoming gig at Metronome. She plays the Metronome Brewery May 4th and 5th, along with bassist Chris Bates and drummer Adam Nussbaum. Lynn, welcome. I wanted to ask you to begin our conversation by talking a little bit about your musical background. Can you tell me a little bit about how you were introduced to music and then ultimately how you became exposed to jazz?
Of course. And thanks for having me. So nice to meet you. I started playing piano when I was 3 or 4 on a plastic toy piano that we had. I grew up in Milwaukee. And I begged my parents to let me study music. And the local piano teacher said I was too young, but I kept persisting. I basically played by ear. I would hear songs from the radio, as well as musicals like My Fair Lady and Camelot and Sound of Music, and would play songs that I had heard. And I studied classical music for many years until I was 25. And I was walking down the street one day in Milwaukee as I was finishing up the rest of my master's degree at the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music. And I had a passing thought. And that thought was, you should study jazz. And not I should study jazz, you should study jazz. And I have no idea where that came from, but I didn't know what jazz was. And I thought, well, maybe I'll check it out and see. And I took a lesson with Tony King at the conservatory, and he put a copy of Round Midnight in front of me, a very famous tune by Thelonious Monk. And he said, play that and then make up new melodies over the same chord changes. And I looked at him and I said, are you kidding? I get to do this? And I said, is that what jazz is? And he said, yeah, that it's, we're basically creating new melodies over existing chord changes. And at that moment, my life changed. I had no idea that that's what jazz was. I had very little exposure to the art form. And I made kind of an abrupt shift at that point and started studying the masters, Bud Powell, Thelonious Monk, Charlie Parker, and many, many others, and started to learn this amazing language.
That's wild. So, I mean, being 25 at the cusp of finishing your master's degree, that's a whole lot of work. Did you feel like it was work that was misplaced, or has that kind of informed the way that you approach jazz?
I feel very fortunate to have studied classical music. I had an amazing teacher whose name is Rebecca Pennies, and she is a world-renowned concert artist, concert pianist. And we had to really rework my whole technique because I was very, very tight when I came to her. And she inspired me and taught me so much about phrasing and how to sing a line to make it sound melodic. I think that's really influenced how I write and how I play jazz, because I'm always looking for melodies. And I believe that melodies reach people. That's what people remember. They don't sing a harmonic progression. They sing a melody.
The performers that kind of really inspired you to dig into jazz piano?
Well, it was all new to me. So I didn't even know who the great players were. But once I started listening, I was listening to, as I mentioned, Bud Powell, Cedar Walton, later Gene Harris, and later Keith Jarrett, who was a big influence. When I first heard his music, I thought, oh my God, it doesn't sound like he's playing anything generic. Any licks that I had ever heard before. It's as if he's spinning out one beautiful melody after another. And I realized that it was that approach that I was looking for. It wasn't about practicing certain idiomatic phrases. It was about creating new and hopefully fresh sounding melodies, you know, consistently.
When
I listen to a lot of piano trio music. I'm a trombone player, but like I feel like a lot of players don't have your sense of space, both when you're improvising, but especially with your melodies, like the opening melody of your new album. It just feels like it's very refined. Is it conscientious, like the way that your melodies come out very sparse, or what's the process when you're composing?
I'm first looking for the opening phrase. That's like meeting someone for the first time. It's a first impression. If we don't reach the audience in the first phrase, when exactly are we going to reach them? And so I look for phrases that have something compelling that draw me in as a listener. And sometimes it will come to me, and sometimes I will just keep trying things and write things down and then come back the next day and see what moves me as a listener. Finding that opening phrase is it's not easy. And I don't play music that I've written just because I've written it. There are so many compositions I've written that will never see the light of day. And that's part of the process to hopefully find things that I like and that I want to play. I was very influenced by a story that I heard about Stevie Wonder years ago, that he, at least for a period in his life, was writing one song a day. Now, if you do the math, he hasn't recorded any, even a fraction of all those compositions. But it's as if he knows that the process is to continue to write in order to find the diamonds. And he's obviously has found many, many diamonds and has created many. And so I embrace the process of writing mediocre stuff and thinking, okay, that's not good. That's not a good song. But sometimes there's a phrase that is like, okay, I don't like the song, but there's one phrase I like, and maybe that'll end up somewhere else at some point. So after I have an initial phrase, I say to myself, what needs to come next? And there is no right or wrong answer to that question. But what needs to come next is totally subjective. And by asking the question, my mind produces, well, it could go here, let me write something. It could go there, let me write something. And then I have literally four or five answers to that initial idea. It might be a variation of the first idea, it might be a totally contrasting idea. I look at the shape of the line, of where it goes. And the next line following, how does it relate to that? So there's a lot of craft involved as well as inspiration.
I could tell. So I'm curious, like before you play jazz, when you were studying classical music, did you study classical composition?
I think, yes, I did study with a brilliant composer, Robert Aldridge, but that was years later. That was not when I was studying classical music. So that came later on. And when I started out with my first recording in 1993, it was called The Eyes Have It. And I think those were my first few compositions. There were some originals on that CD and some arrangements of standards. And it was very challenging. Like, what do you do? How do you write a tune? It's easier to arrange someone else's tune than to write your own. But I got started and I continue the process.
I'm curious because it's such recent history. How did the pandemic impact you as an artist? I mean, obviously everybody stopped working in public for a while, but how did you remain productive and channel your creative energy during that time?
I was writing material for a new album at that time. And right before the pandemic, I was going to release an album called Chimes of Freedom, which highlighted the immigration crisis and the struggle to preserve our democracy. And all the tour dates were canceled. That happened to so many fellow musicians. I remained at home and started writing material for another CD. I heard an interview with Dr. Prakash Gatta of Tacoma, Washington, and he said, I'm here treating COVID patients, and no matter what happens, no one works from home. The lights are always on. I listened to the interview and I sat there stunned, thinking about how fortunate we are to have people who love us and are taking care of us during these times, and all the time, but especially during COVID, where just taking care of patients could put someone's life at risk, and did. And that was the title of a new CD called The Lights Are Always On. And I expanded that idea to encompass that the lights of humanity are always on, even in the midst of utter devastation. And I dedicated songs to Ruth Bader Ginsburg and to John Lewis and to Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman as real heroes of our time. And so that's how I spent that time. And then after that, you know, I started writing For Being Human, which is the current release.
Can you tell me about the impetus for this new recording on Challenge Records?
This new recording, Being Human, is a response to the division in our country and throughout the world. I wanted to write material that reflected the many different qualities that we share in common with our fellow human beings and send a message of hope and a message of unity. And so I focused on characteristics that we all share in common, or attributes such as curiosity, passion, courage, joy, love, and many other qualities. And I also dedicated some of these compositions to people who I felt reflected these attributes.
I listened to Love, and I noticed that it didn't have the extended solos from the participating musicians. It seemed like it was all about melody. Can you talk about the composition?
Yes, that composition just came to me. There are certain slightly dissonant elements to it, but to my ear, it has a warm kind of major positive quality in the sound. And I don't know where that melody came from. It's sometimes they just pop into our heads and you know, we just say thank you. And I did two renditions of Love, actually. I did one with the trio and one on a clavinova using voices. I was upstairs about to sell a clavinova that belonged to my late husband. And a friend of mine was with me and he said, why don't you play a song for me before we put it on eBay? And I said, okay, I'll play Love. And I fooled around with the different sounds and I found one that was voices. And I thought, these sound really realistic. And I played Love very slowly and it was like, it was with the voices. And so that tune was presented twice because it was such a different color to do it through the clavinova. But there's kind of a quality to this tune that was reminiscent of a chorale. It's lyrical, it's simple. There are inner voices that move that create certain tensions. It's meant to be lyrical and have a feeling of warmth and hopefully reach out to people. And I hope they will feel it in their hearts.
Tell me about the other members of your ensemble.
Alan Neer is from Tel Aviv and lives there and in New York. And he is a very lyrical player and also has just a great interactive feel. And this is our first recording together. And the drummer is Lukasz Zita, who is from Warsaw. And we just did this long tour together. And I feel like the chemistry feels great between the three of us.
Is there anything else you want to say about this new recording or about your upcoming gig at Metronome?
I am so looking forward to playing with Chris Bates, who is an amazing bassist, and with Adam Nussbaum, who's a great iconic drummer who's coming from the East Coast to play. And we'll be playing selections from Being Human, The Lights Are Always On, and Chimes of Freedom. And I am so excited about playing at Metronome.
Pianist Lynn Arriol is performing at Metronome Brewery May 4th and 5th, and her recent recording on Challenge Records is called Being Human. I'm Peter Solomon for Jazz 88.